Concours Écricom 2015. Épreuve orale de langue anglaise. Texte numéro 13. You wouldn't know the SNP lost the referendum. The Scottish Nationalists lost September's independence referendum. You wouldn't know it. Many SNP members have joined the party since that black day, September the 18th, which was supposed to have laid the Nationalist cause to rest for a generation, in the words of the party's then leader, Alex Salmond. On referendum day, the SNP had 22,000 members. Now it has 95,000. Almost 4,000 signed up on November the 22nd, during a televised rally for Mr. Salmond's successor, Nicola Sturgeon, which was attended by 12,000 people. The SNP is now Britain's third biggest party, more than twice the size of the Liberal Democrats, the next biggest, whose thinning ranks are more typical of British parties. The ruling Conservatives have a membership of around 130,000, half as many as a decade ago. Many Scots found a sense of purpose and belonging in the separatist campaign. In a time of dying parties, a fracturing electorate and falling turnout, especially among younger British voters, Scotland's referendum turns out to have been a democratic boon. Scots have historically voted less in general elections than the British average. The percentage who say they will definitely vote in May is, at 60%, 10 points above it, apparently due to surging support for the SNP. This would give the separatists more of Scotland's 59 seats, 41 of which are held by Labour, and make it the third biggest party in Westminster. One of Britain's most charismatic and divisive politicians, Mr. Salmond has sworn to rumble up Westminster and secure real power for Scotland. That means he plans to be as obstructive as it takes on any non-Scottish issue to wield maximum influence on Scottish ones. Given the existing difficulty of passing legislation, because of the failure which is likely to endure of either the Tories or Labour to command a majority, this is a dire prospect for a system whose frailties Mr. Salmond has a record of turning to his advantage. His campaign was fuelled as much by anti-Westminster as by nationalist sentiment. Yet it also shows why the allure of nationalism, which British, especially Labour, politicians have serially underestimated, is an inadequate explanation for the party's rise. The fundamental difference between the Yes and No campaigns was that the former offered a positive and dynamic vision of Scotland's future, while the latter, after much head-scratching, promised more of a dreary status quo. This was not all the Unionists' fault. The separatist promise of fairness, a better society, no more cuts, no more poverty, was fanciful. The No campaign, whose more realistic prognostications were inevitably dull by comparison, was also rendered more negative, monochrome and risk-averse than it would otherwise have been by its cross-party design. But those caveats admitted, the failure of mainstream British politicians to offer a compelling vision to set against the populists is also fundamental, and, as long as they cannot rectify this, it condemns them to further decline. It would help if they would stop running down Britain's present. This is partly a consequence of their convergence in the centre, which makes it hard for voters to distinguish between them, even as they continue to knock lumps out of each other's records. A more optimistic take on Britain's present would be a useful counter to the utopians, yet insufficient. Mainstream politicians need a compelling vision of their own.